Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Long, Josh Goldberg with you. Haven't been able to say this too often in 2021 for the Blue Jays, and especially of late, but they got shut out for just the third time this season, losing 2-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays tonight in a blistering affair, Josh. This one was over in just around 2.5 hours, which is pretty remarkable because the Blue Jays have been playing some lengthy ball games of late because they've just nonstop been scoring. But tonight, that was not the case. The offense was stymied by pretty good Rays pitching. Drew Rasmussen got the start tonight. He was solid, got a little batted ball luck for sure. Some nice defensive plays by the Rays in the field, which is obviously their forte. Pete Fairbanks, JT Chargois, Dave Robertson, and Andrew Kittredge coming out of the pen to throw 4 one-hit innings. So the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen, it's been, you know, sort of ravaged by injuries this year, but tonight, kind of vintage Tampa Bay Rays baseball.
Yeah, really, really frustrating. And a bunch of guys you've never heard of, and it's hard to believe that they're actually real human beings, like JT Chargois and Pete Fairbanks and Lewis Head pitched last night, and Adam Conley they somehow have dug up after not really working out as a starter on a couple of teams, and he's got a sub-2 ERA. And it like they talked about it on the broadcast, Ben did, and I heard it as well. Dan Schulman was talking about it. They're really tough because it's one thing to have, you know, the velo and some good movement, but like when you have these guys come one after the other with interesting arm angles and different arm angles, and some are a little bit funky, it's so hard to key in on guys when you're seeing something completely different inning to inning. And it was clear that the Blue Jays were very much befuddled by those Rays relievers tonight. And I think they scored, I want to say it was 52 runs over the previous 4 games. So, you know, they were probably due for a little bit of a regression to the mean, but to only muster up 3 hits and get shut out, particularly on a night where Jose Berríos was really, really good, leaves a bit of a sour taste in your mouth.
Absolutely. And look, the Rays bullpen has been their strength for a long, long time. You just look at ERA this season. Their bullpen sitting fourth in the entire league at 3.35. So they obviously do this quite often. But I think it's what's so surprising about their method is, you know, we saw yesterday with Colin McHugh as the opener and it didn't work out. The Blue Jays were able to get to Ryan Yarbrough. Is that, you know, you talk about as well when, you know, teams do bullpen games, and I know you're not a big fan of it. I'm not a huge fan of it either. The Rays have found a way to, you know, perfect it, of course, with the opener. But you're basically banking on, you know, 4, sometimes 5, sometimes more guys, you know, all being on the same night. And when they are, you see a game like tonight, you know, where 5 pitchers come into the ball game and it works perfectly. But you see a game like yesterday where Colin McHugh's great, but Ryan Yarbrough isn't particularly good, and you lose the ball game. So it's really quite an interesting system that the Rays have here where, you know, they rely so heavily on their bullpen, and it seems like more often than not that, you know, their guys are on, and that's why they've won so many games this season.
Yeah, and like it's a little bit of a dangerous recipe, I guess, over the course of 162 games. Like, can your bullpen really hold up that long? And we saw that they were aggressive early in the season, you know, making some trades to fortify it. And we saw Drew Rasmussen start a ball game tonight, but, you know, like they made that deal with the Milwaukee Brewers and parted with Willy Adames, who's become a really good player for Milwaukee because they wanted more arms. And that's how they kind of do it. And you look at their starting rotation, not good, right? With Tyler Glasnow out due to injury, you look up and down, Chris Archer's been hurt, he's hurt again, Michael Wacha's got a ERA, I believe it's north of 5, he's pitching tomorrow, and they're still 35 or so games above 500. It really kind of defies logic that they're able to do it over the course of 162, and the bullpen mostly does the job. It's got the best bullpen ERA in the American League and one of the best in Major League Baseball, and that there's not, like we've seen with the Blue Jays, a stretch of a couple weeks where the bullpen is blowing them games. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily something that teams should look at and say, well, that's how we want to operate a little bit, is just really place all of our emphasis on the bullpen. Because, like, as we have seen many, many times over the course of the last number of years, whether it's been the Blue Jays or not, a lot of times relief pitching is kind of voodoo magic, you know, sometimes within a season, but certainly season to season, one season to the next, where there's a lot of variance, and a great bullpen just kind of you run it back the next year could all of a sudden become mediocre or worse just because, you know, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to relief pitching. So for the Rays to seemingly do it now on a pretty consistent basis over a couple of years, it's crazy to me. It's one of the things about them that is the most confounding to me.
It definitely is, and it worked out in their favor tonight as they beat the Blue Jays 2-0. As always, you can text us 59590, give us your name and your location. We'll get to those texts coming up in just a bit here with you for another half hour or so. But lots to get to from this ball game, and let's begin with Jose Berríos, who definitely was not his fault tonight, Josh, in the outing that he had. Went 7 innings, gave up just one run. It was a G-Man Choi solo homer, a pitch that Berríos left right over the heart of the plate, and G-Man Choi hit it into the second deck in right field. But he was sensational in this one for a fourth straight outing, has really turned things around since making those mechanical changes. Just 87 pitches on the night. You know, we'll see if, you know, Charlie Montoyo has anything to say in the post game about maybe something that Berríos was dealing with. If you just watched it on the TV tonight, you could see him obviously upset that he was coming out of the game, wanted to keep going. And I understand the competitor in him wanted to be out there. But you look at the situation at that point in the ball game, Blue Jays down a run, heading into that eighth inning. And I know Mike Zunino was due up to lead off the top of the eighth, and he crushes lefties, but the Blue Jays go to Tim Mesa because there's two other lefties to follow in Brandon Lau and Austin Meadows. And I figure, you know, it was a case where they probably just wanted to give Tim Mesa the clean start to the inning, not have to bring him in if, you know, Mike Zunino is on base or something. Of course, it doesn't go Mesa's way, gives up a solo homer to Brandon Lau, which you don't really expect because Mesa's been so good against lefty hitters this year, and Lau isn't exactly great against lefty pitching. Hung a slider up in the zone, and Lau hits it out to right field for the second Rays run. But what did you make of Berríos, and what did you make of the decision to lift him after 7 innings?
Okay, well, now we have some information on the decision that apparently Jose Berríos was removed from tonight's game with abdominal tightness.
Not great.
Yeah, left side, Charlie, I think, said post-game. Felt something in his side. Team is calling it left abdominal tightness. Well, that's really bad because, like, hopefully it's not, you know, the dreaded O word. You know where I'm going with this.
Yes,
because
yes.
If it is that, Jose Berríos' season is probably done, if I had to guess. Like, if it's an oblique strain of any serious magnitude, certainly his regular season, I would think, would be in jeopardy. So we'll see what happens there. If there's any imaging, keep your fingers crossed, because, boy, oh, boy, that would be really tough.
Yeah, that would. I mean, we just see Ross Stripling getting back this past week. He was gone for quite some time. So, let's hope that's not the case. As it stands right now, as you mentioned, the Blue Jays just calling it abdominal tightness in his left side. He's receiving treatment right now, so the starting pitcher for the Blue Jays tonight will not be speaking. So there we go. We find out why Berríos came out of that ball game in that spot, having just thrown 87 pitches and was obviously firing on all cylinders at that point. The other, you know, moment that stood out for me in this ball game, Josh, of course, in the bottom of the eighth inning, David Robertson, the veteran reliever, coming in to pitch for the Rays. It's pretty remarkable that Tampa Bay is, relying on a guy who didn't even begin the season in the major leagues, was pitching in Olympic qualifiers, and the Rays basically signed him off the street because they've been ravaged so badly in their bullpen. But the Blue Jays decide to not pinch hit for Breivik Valera and Reese McGuire. Pretty stunned, to be honest with you, knowing that you've got both Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen on the bench. Obviously, we're going to see Kirk get the start tomorrow with Robbie Ray on the hill. So I can understand maybe not going to Kirk because he's going to get the full game tomorrow with Robbie Ray on the hill. But Danny Jansen is on the bench, and he's been red hot. And if we're being honest, he's a better hitter than Reese McGuire. And I know it's not the platoon split that you're looking for, but Danny Jansen this year, because of the hot streak that he's been on, he's got an OPS around 860 against right-handed hitters, and Reese McGuire coming into tonight was at 733. And I know he had a hit in this one, struck a ball hard as well. Nice catch by Manuel Margot. But I think this is what has frustrated me at times this year about some of the managerial decisions, is that there are certain moments where it seems like the level of urgency goes up and Charlie Montoyo pulls the trigger on something. And you're like, of course, this makes sense. You know, there's a big spot here. You want to try to win the game. You're trying to, you know, pull out all the stops. And then you see a moment like tonight where I know the Blue Jays offense has been rolling. I pointed out everything there for Reese McGuire tonight, you know, hitting some balls hard, but you've got options to pinch hit for him in that spot. Ravik Valera, I know he's had some big hits recently, had three hits last night, but you've got Jake Lamb on the bench, who's a much better hitter against righty pitching than Ravik Valera. So while it may be nitpicking in some people's minds and, you know, maybe marginal things, those add up, right? Those things add up. You look at the team on the other side of the field tonight in the Tampa Bay Rays, that's what they thrive on. They thrive on gaining those small edges, which is why, you know, they're so difficult to play against, because they don't really give up anything to the other team. They make a lot of smart moves. And for me tonight, I didn't think that was the right decision to let Ravik Valera and Reese McGuire hit in the bottom of the eighth in a two-run ballgame.
Yeah, like both, I would say, were not preferable. Reese McGuire's barely played, right? He's basically hasn't played in a week. He had one at bat a couple of days ago in the blowout against Baltimore, but he's basically hasn't been playing since Danny Jansen came back. So if you're gonna have him catch, okay, he had a hit, and I saw a stat on the broadcast that his average after the seventh inning was over 300, but that doesn't really mean much to me. And that's why you now all of a sudden have a pretty deep bench where you have a couple of options. Like, you have Grichik, you have Lamb, and obviously you have Kirk. So 2-0 ball game in that situation, perfect opportunity to either cut the lead in half with a one swing of the bat home run situation that somebody like Jake Lamb is much more liable to hit a home run than Ravik Valera is. I don't think anyone is going to try and dispute that. And then Kirk is the guy that I'm looking to pinch hit for Reese McGuire. I don't think that it's really that confusing of a situation. So I was definitely puzzled. Like, maybe you could try and convince me into one of them getting an at-bat, but for both to go up there was definitely not what I thought was the right move in that situation. You know, you look at the rest of the night, like, it wasn't won or lost in that situation. They still only had three hits, and the top of the order, again, didn't really do much damage after kind of missing it the boat last night when it was really 5-9 that carried them. But you want to put your best foot forward and put yourself in the best possible situation with your optimal configuration, especially in late and close situations. And Valera and McGuire batting in a two-run game in the eighth inning when you're down and chasing runs would not be what I would consider the optimal configuration.
For sure. And like I said, I understand, you know, where Charlie Montoyo probably is coming from, because Ravik Valera has been hitting well. So, you know, he doesn't want to take a guy out when he's on the right side of the platoon as well, as a switch hitter there against David Robertson. But, you know, Jake Lamb, I know he was a waiver claim by the Blue Jays, but this is a guy who has a pretty good track record of hitting, you know, right-handed pitching at the major league level. This is, you know, what he does. It's the same reason why the Blue Jays, you know, have Corey Dickerson playing tonight in the game, because he hits well against right-handed pitching. I know Randall Grichik has been absolutely on fire, but that's, once again, like, that to me, it's like, okay, why are you playing Corey Dickerson? Because you like the platoon advantage, but you're not willing to put in Jake Lamb, who's a better hitter on that side than Ravik Valera. So once again, it kind of just doesn't make sense to me where, you know, in one spot you're making the right move, in my opinion, and you're seemingly trying to take advantage of those small edges, and then in a spot you're just deciding to not do that at all. It's just confounding.
Really a good point there that, yeah, I was looking at Randall Grichik's numbers in September. He's been really good. A lot of people were saying, oh, well, if Randall could get hot down the stretch, look out if the rest of the lineup's going. And that's exactly what has happened. Randall Grichik has a 192 WRC plus in the month of September and has only struck out four times in over 30 at bats and has walked a couple of times as well. So he's hot right now. He had a big hit last night, RBI double. Yeah, I would have played him. I would have played him tonight, even if you wanted to go with Dickerson in that situation. Like, I don't hate it, but like you said, if you're going to the platoon edge, okay. But Ravik Valera, I think by all accounts, is a better right-handed hitter against lefties, and is a better and Jake Lamb is obviously a better hitter against right-handed pitching. We saw Valera do a little bit of damage, obviously, against Ryan Yarbrough last night from the right side of the plate, so that kind of held true. And yeah, it didn't really make sense that he was the guy when they've talked about how he's a better hitter against left-handed pitching. So a puzzler, like the Dickerson one, I'm less annoyed about, even though Grichuk has been going really good. It's still a tough righty, and you know, Randall has some issues against righties, especially who have nasty sliders and can mix a high heater up in the zone. So I would have played him, but if you were going to go with the platoon edge, then it certainly made sense to go with Dickerson and also Lamb over Valera, no question.
Yeah, and while we're here, nitpicking, if you will, I also would have hit Lourdes Gurriel Jr. up the lineup a little bit higher than behind Corey Dickerson. And, you know, I had some people telling me about, oh, the fact that it lengthens the lineup, and I guess, you know, people are saying, you don't want to mess with a good thing. I don't think you're going to ruin the lineup by moving arguably the hottest hitter in all of baseball right now up a spot to the sixth hole. Like, that's not going to mess things up. It's going to give Lourdes Gurriel Jr. a chance for potentially more at-bats. Didn't work out tonight, obviously, because the Blue Jays only had three hits on the evening and just one walk. So Gurriel Jr. only had three at-bats on the night. But, you know, just another situation where, kind of scratching my head. Like, this guy has been sensational. We've been talking about it pretty much all day about how good he has been so far this season. But the Blue Jays unable to generate a single run tonight after lighting up the scoreboard for the previous four games as they lose 2-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Coming up next, we'll get to your text. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. We'll also hear some post-game audio. We'll hear from the manager, Charlie Montoyo. He'll give us the latest on Jose Barrios. It's Jay's Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob and Josh on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Pacing stressfully in front of your radio is a totally normal way to listen. You stress because you care. Toronto Blue Jays baseball's on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jay's Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Blue Jays falling to the Tampa Bay Rays tonight 2-0 as they have their win streak come to an end. And as it stands right now, they are a half game up on the Yankees for the top wild card spot. And right now, things looking pretty good for the New York Yankees as they lead it 6-1 over the Baltimore Orioles. They are in the bottom of the eighth inning. We'll get to your text coming up in just a moment. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. But after the ball game tonight, Blue Jays manager Charlie Montoyo spoke about Jose Barrios, who left this game after seven solid innings and just 87 pitches. This is why.
Hey, Charlie, can you tell us a little bit more about what happened to Jose and what his status is, what you know about his status right now?
Yeah, he felt something on his side, and, you know, so that's why we took him out of the game. Of course, he was doing a great job. Just to be cautious, and, you know, so right now we're going to call it a left abdominal tightness, you know, and we'll see how it feels tomorrow. He's getting treatment right now, so he's not getting any imaging, so because he thinks it feels right, but we'll see how it feels tomorrow.
Were there any, was he feeling anything at different points in the start, or did he just suddenly set on to him after his seventh inning there?
When he came from the seventh inning, he said he felt something. So the moment he says that, okay, you're good. And that's why we took him out, yeah.
So there's Charlie Montoyo on the rationale behind why Jose Barrios did not come back out for the eighth inning, Josh. And I guess the one positive is that he's not getting imaging on it. So, you know, maybe they have avoided something here. He's just getting treatment on it. That doesn't mean there's not going to be imaging on it if it, you know, starts to feel worse tomorrow. But at least for now, maybe we can just kind of let it play out and not hit the panic button just yet.
I always my finger, especially when it comes to injuries like that, like, I've got an itchy trigger finger when it comes to the panic button. So to hear no imaging is encouraging, but, like, you never, like, look, a classic case in point, Blake Snell left his start a couple of days ago after two-thirds of an inning with, I think it was adductor soreness or something like that. And the talk after the game was, well, you know, just precaution. He felt a little something. And then he woke up the next morning more sore than they anticipated. So hopefully that is not the case. But when it comes to stuff like this, you know, a muscle strain in your side or your abdomen or something to that effect. You never know how you're going to wake up the next morning. And maybe, you know, he feels great. No imaging is needed, but I'm still going to be guarded against this and hoping for the best, but prepared for maybe not the best news in the world.
Yeah, totally understandable. Like you said, it's the O word that we try not to say too often on this program when it comes to injuries. We already saw, you know, Ross Stripling come back from that injury, and he was gone for several weeks. So it's one of those things that can be pretty tough to manage, and hopefully we'll get an update tomorrow on the status of Jose Berríos. But right now, let's get to your texts. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. Joining us to do that is Sho Ali. Sho, what's up, Al?
Hey, guys. Yeah, a bit of a tough ball game today, but much like you guys, I'm hoping that nothing too much is wrong with Jose Berríos, because, boy, like Josh said, I tend to also sometimes lean to the towards the negative sometimes. So,
I think I've poisoned you. I've poisoned you, Sho. I think I have.
I hope not.
Honestly, I am sorry if I have.
Turn my mic on. I've muted my mic. All right, so let's get to the text line, guys. I see a number of texts here. One from Joshua in Mississauga. He says, Montoyo needs to learn to ride the hot hitters. Gritch should have been starting in center field today, and Kirk or Jano should have been catching. I don't care if it was a right-handed pitcher. The Jays shouldn't have started their third-best catcher.
Yeah. So, I mean, you already said it, Josh. You would have gone with Randall Grichuk tonight, because when Randall's hot, you obviously want to keep him out there. I was surprised that Danny Jansen didn't start this ball game, because he caught Berríos the last time out as well. So I thought, hey, this is your new tandem moving forward. I was a little bit surprised to see Reese McGuire in there. We obviously did not get really any comment as to why that was the move this evening, but you know, when you've got the way Jansen is hitting right now, and Kirk, like we said, is going to play tomorrow, so he wasn't, you know, going to get into this ball game tonight, barring, I think, something crazy, or if the Blue Jays really wanted to, you know, get his bat in there. But, you know, I was pretty surprised that Danny Jansen didn't start this game.
Yeah, I would have. Well, you know what? It really kind of stems back to the fact that George Springer can't play center field right now. Really, like, it's great that he's able to be in the lineup, and he gutted through another game and hustled out a double that I honestly couldn't believe he was actually trying it. The fact that he got in there, I thought he looked pretty good. So that was obviously encouraging. But if he's in center field, like, okay, maybe Randall Grichuk isn't getting as much playing time, and this hot September isn't as much of a conversation. But it would allow you to DH Kirk and have Kirk's bat in the lineup on a more frequent basis, and then, you know, catch Danny Jansen and then mix Randall in at DH days in certain situations if Jansen's not going to play and you catch Kirk. It just gives you a lot more options, but, like, unfortunately that's not the case right now. Kirk hit a bunch of balls hard last night. I think I'm with you. I probably would have played Jansen, because what is that? That's two straight games that Danny Jansen hasn't played after a really good weekend in Baltimore. So I honestly, Reese McGuire to me is only a late inning replacement, if anything. Like, he's just on the roster right now, I think, more in a depth purpose. So I was definitely surprised when I saw he was in the lineup. And you bring up another good point that Jansen just caught Berríos, and Berríos pitched really effectively in a big spot against the Yankees in hostile territory. So I was definitely surprised that Danny Jansen didn't play tonight. And then to really go for broke and let McGuire, just to bring it back to that pinch hit. Like, it's one thing not to play him. You can take umbrage with that. But it's another to really put him under the microscope in a big spot there, even with two outs and nobody on in the eighth inning, and not go to a better hitter. Like, the whole situation of McGuire playing tonight is definitely one that I would think if you could have a mulligan on it, you would like one.
Well, I mean, it's not even like a straight up Kirk or Jansen for McGuire. You mentioned it, like Randall Grichuk's on the bench. Like, you've got Randall, you've got Jake Lamb, you've got other guys that, like, let's run it down. Just the quick hierarchy: Reese McGuire, Danny Jansen, Alejandro Kirk, Jake Lamb, Randall Grichuk. Who is the fifth best hitter out of those five players? It's Reese McGuire. And for him to be in that spot, I really don't get it. And just kind of left scratching my head once again. But Sho, let's go back to the text line. What else you got?
I've seen a version of this text come in a couple of times over the last week, and I think I can probably speak for all of us when I say we're not really sure what the answer is, because the Tim in Stony Creek just wants to know, at what point does the Rogers Center allow more fans? I think the simple answer to that is whenever the provincial government says so, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Shapiro said it on Baseball Central a while back that he's just going by what the government is saying. So, I mean, he's not going to push them. He's very happy just to have baseball back in Toronto. When it's going to be time, they'll let him know, and they'll do it. I know some people think if the Blue Jays host a wild card game or come playoffs, that they're going to be, lighting it up with 50,000 fans in the stadium, fully vaxxed or, negative tests, which is obviously what they're going with right now. That still feels pretty unlikely, to be honest with you, even if it takes, a vaccine, fully vaccinated or a negative test to get in there, Josh. But I don't think we'll be seeing 50,000 fans at Rogers Center for a while.
Yeah, I would be surprised if it happened this year. I would honestly probably be surprised if it was increased in any way, shape, or form. But I will say I was able to go to the game last night with a pal. It was great. The process of getting in was very efficient, so like you shouldn't have any concerns about a real logjam or anything like that getting into the ballpark, showing your proof of vaccination or your negative test. And like I thought the crowd was really good last night. Like it was hard to tell tonight. There wasn't a lot of energy, obviously, because there weren't a lot of exciting plays. But last night it felt like more than 15,000. Like, I think that the passion of this fan base, even at a diminished capacity, with what has happened over the last couple of weeks and knowing that you're in a really advantageous position here with 17 now left games left in the season, I think that's going to fire fans up, even if it's 14,000 or something like that. And I do think, like, you look at the record since the Blue Jays came back to the Rogers Center, I think they're 19-8 now, if I'm not mistaken, a really, really good winning percentage. And I don't think it's any coincidence. I do think that there is, even with only 14 or 15,000 fans in the seats, a discernible, legitimate home field advantage for the Blue Jays playing at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to the text line. What else you got, Show?
Sure, I actually see a couple ones here. I'll kind of mix in a tweet, too. I see Jeff tweets in to say Vlad and Bichette couldn't do anything with two on and no outs in that one inning. That was the game right there. Maybe the lack of experience in tough game situations, showing bow chasing pitches way off the plate. And then someone else, there was no name on this text, but kind of the same thing. Do you think we ever see a major change in Bo's plate approach? I know being aggressive has sort of been his thing, and it's really benefited him, but his strikeout today was really ugly, especially in that situation. The best hitters in the game are the most patient ones, Juan Soto, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., etc.
So I've been using this word all night long, Josh, nitpicking, and it feels like we're going here once again with Bo. Like, this is a guy who's been, tearing the cover off the ball for, like, the last week and has hit some monster home runs. I mean, he homered yesterday, so it's not as if it's a situation where he's going through some, lengthy streak where it's just, poor at-bat after poor at-bat after poor at-bat. Like, the guy's on a bit of a roll right now, but I just think in totality, as it stands right now in this part of Bo Bichette's career, this is who he is as a hitter, and you have to take the good with the bad. We've seen a lot of the good for the last week, and tonight we saw a lot of bad, especially in those ABs against Drew Rasmussen. So I don't think we're going to have this conversation every single night about, Bo Bichette AB here, Bo Bichette AB there. This is just who he is. And if you can't handle it, then I'm sorry, but he is someone that's hyper aggressive, and maybe he does find a way to tone it down as he gets older and more mature and, learns more about the pitchers around the league. But as it stands right now, 23-year-old Bo Bichette, I've called him a wild horse. Like, that's what he is at this point of his career.
Yeah, like I think if you lose that aggressiveness, then you lose the beauty of the player that Bo Bichette is and probably the player he's going to continue to blossom into. Yeah, you'd like to see a little bit more recognition and a little bit more selectiveness. And, Rasmussen kind of toyed with him a little bit. And I think that over time, there will be some incremental improvements. But you're going to have to get used to some bad at-bats from Bo Bichette. I think that's just going to kind of be part of the Bo Bichette experience. There's going to be plenty of good or great or excellent or whatever else you want to say about it, but there is going to be some really rough and some tough swings in some big spots. It just sort of is the nature of the beast when you play a hair on fire style in every way, shape, and form, whether he's at the plate, in the field, running the bases. That's who he is, and I don't want to see him lose it because I think it will diminish some of like how unique and effective he can be on the whole as a ball player. So if it is, you know, a few too many head scratching at bats where, you know, you're just kind of left wondering what exactly just happened, I think that's just, it's a necessary evil, because I think when you look at the complete package of Bo Bichette, the good, very good, or great is going to far, far, far outweigh anything in the negative side of things.
Yeah, this is a guy we're talking about when you look at Fangraphs wars and, you know, the top 30 in all of baseball for position players. So, like, he is extremely valuable. And we saw it tonight as well. I mean, the defense has really come around this season. Made a great play there early on in the ballgame to save a run. So he's had a great season. And I know it gets frustrating at times, you know, watching him swing at pitches way out of the zone to strike out. But there's been a lot more good, I would say, this year from Bo Bichette than there has been bad, to say the least. All right, let's grab one more text show. What else you seeing?
Sure, yeah, let's wrap up on this one. This is more of a comment than a question, but I kind of like it. Mike from Didsbury says, this one reminds me of a Halladay-Burley game. This is an exact game we'll see in the playoffs. No matter what, all roads run through Tampa right now, the best against the best, no matter how good the offense pitching, no matter how good the offense, pitching and defense wins, very few blowouts in the playoffs. Good primer for what we all expect to see soon. Mike from Didsbury.
Yeah, and I get that tonight was frustrating with the Blue Jays' lack of offense, Josh, but, you know, Sho and I talked about this on last night's program, that you look at all the games that the Blue Jays and Rays have played this year, you know, aside from last night, there haven't been too many blowouts. They've all been pretty close, you know, 1-2, 3-run ball games. The records may look a little bit different right now, but I would say these two teams are pretty evenly matched. I think, you know, the Rays still are the better team, of course, but it's not as if it's some gigantic chasm between the Blue Jays and Rays when you look at both of these teams.
No, and I've been saying this till the cows come home about the Rays. They find a way to take advantage of some of the things that you don't do well. And even when you play two-thirds of a really good game, the Blue Jays pitched really well tonight, and they played good defense, but the Rays were able to capitalize tonight. They pitched effectively, and they won a ball game that over the last couple of weeks, the Blue Jays have been finding many a ways to win. And that's what makes the Rays really, really frustrating, because you look up and down and you wonder to yourself, you know, like, there's not a lot of guys who'd leap off the page here with talent or skill or offensive numbers outside of, I guess, Nelson Cruz, who's more of a hired gun than anything else, and they still find a way to get it done. Like, it's the ultimate begrudging respect. You hate them, but damn, like, how can you not kind of respect at the same time what they're able to do, spending no money and consistently building a really effective major league roster? It's one of the most confounding things in Major League Baseball. Like, I equal parts hate it and love it as a beloved fan of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, if the Rays were in the NL East, you wouldn't care. But they're in the AL East, and you have to watch them so many times a season duke it out with the Toronto Blue Jays, and in their own little way, with their bullpen, their defense, their scrappy hitters. It's annoying, but you got to tip your cap to the Tampa Bay Rays for how they get the job done. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Blue Jays lose a 2-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays tonight as their win streak comes to an end. When we continue, we'll wrap things up, get you set for the series finale tomorrow afternoon. It's Jays Talk, Rob and Josh on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Essentials for a game. Bat, ball, glove, radio. This is Toronto Blue Jays baseball on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you as the Blue Jays lose to the Tampa Bay Rays 2-0 tonight. They get shutout for just the second time this season, which is pretty remarkable, but not entirely surprising considering how good the offense has been so far this season. So the Blue Jays coming into the series, Josh, I think a lot of people felt if you got 2 of 3 against the Rays, you were going to be very happy with this series. Well, they still can do that with a series victory tomorrow. Robbie Ray getting the start against Michael Wacha, who you know, hasn't been great. Not surprising. The guy is obviously past his prime at this stage of his career. On the season, Michael Wacha with a 5.37 ERA. So it could potentially be a get right spot for the Blue Jays offense after what they showed tonight. But Robbie Ray looking to bounce back after all those shenanigans in Baltimore. What are you expecting tomorrow afternoon?
I'm expecting Robbie Ray to shove. He's gone seven innings in each of the three starts against the Rays. You can bet your ass he's going to be motivated to bounce back. I'm expecting vintage Robbie Ray performance to really solidify again his Cy Young candidacy.
All right, we shall see. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links. Send hunger down to the minors and feed your wild side. First pitch tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. Ben Wagner on the call. Thanks for tuning in to Jays Talk. Thanks for everyone behind the scenes for helping us out tonight. For Josh Goldberg, I'm Rob Wong. We'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon.